first article that I have for you today. Mozilla Firefox 75 is now available for download. Here's what's new. This article written by Marius Nestor from 9to5linux.com. With only a few hours left before its official release on April 7th, the Mozilla Firefox 75 web browser is now available to download for all supported platforms, including Linux, Mac, and Windows. Development on the Firefox 75 release kicked off a month ago, and I already reported on the new features, which included a revamped address bar that not only looks better on smaller screens, but also makes it easier for users to access their favorite sites with less typing. Mozilla Firefox 75 also improves HTTPS compatibility with misconfigured web servers by locally caching all web PKI certificate authority certificates trusted by Mozilla in the background by default. If you'd like to read the rest of this article, it will be posted in the show notes. The next article, 9to5linux.com by Marius Nestor, PinePhone Ubuntu Touch Edition now available for pre-order. The UbiPorts Foundation announced today the availability of a special version of Pine64's PinePhone Linux smartphone that comes pre-installed with Ubuntu Touch mobile operating system. Meet the PinePhone UbiPorts Community Edition, the first variant of the PinePhone Linux phone to come pre-installed with a mobile operating system, namely the gorgeous Ubuntu Touch produced by UbiPorts. It took UbiPorts a year and a half to produce the PinePhone UbiPorts Community Edition, which ships with the Lomiri, formerly Unity 8 user interface, but it's finally available for pre-order for only $149.99. I know you've been waiting for this moment, like me and many other Linux and open source enthusiasts, but you can now finally buy a working Linux phone that doesn't require you to install an OS. And the same with this article. If you'd like to read the rest, it will be posted with the show notes. For the historical article today from linux.com/news, posted April 7, 2006, Linux.com Weekly Security Advisory, April 7, 2006. Debian, Fedora, Gentoo, Mandriva, Red Hat, and Ubuntu released advisories this week. The affected packages include Mailman, Samba, Caffeine, and that's Caffeine with a K, Store Backup, PHP, MySQL, Sendmail, FreeRadius, Horde, ClamAV, OpenMotif, MediaWiki, Dia, Doomsday, TZ Data, and this last program, libapreq2-perl, okay? This week, the vendors of Debian and Ubuntu issued updates for GNU Mailman, the GNU Mailing List Manager. Mailman is primarily written in the Python programming language, but developers also rely on some C code. Mailman is used to manage email distribution for discussion lists, announcement lists, and electronic newsletters. Since email list administrators can use web-based interface to manage the list, and Mailman includes its own archiving feature, it offers a flexibility that makes it very popular with users. Duncan S. Salata discovered the vulnerability, which is located in the attachment scrubber, scrubber.py, in Mailman version 2.1.5 and earlier. The problem only affects installations which use the Python Library Email Module 2.5, which is part of Python, according to Mark Sapiro. The bug in scrubber.py contains the following insert before the size equals len payload. It's commented out in Mailman's precompiled code. So this is a very interesting article about a bug in Mailman. A correction, vulnerability in Mailman. And in LibreQuest-related news, I do have an interview to play. In this interview, I'm speaking with Lux from Linux Lounge, and I'm going to go ahead and start that interview now. I'm here with Lux of Linux Lounge, who will be guest hosting some LibreQuest episodes in the near future. Hello, Lux. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I am Lux of Linux Lounge, and yeah, I'm going to be hosting some episodes.
Could you talk about your history with Linux?
Yeah, sure. Well, it kind of goes back sort of maybe 4 or 5 years, which for some people's not a long time at all. I think when I was getting into it, I was kind of like fairly into the sort of jailbreaking scene. So I was like very into customizing just everything. And Linux seemed like a pretty good way to do that. And like a lot, I started off with Linux Mint, which was pretty great. Although at the time it was actually far less usable than it is now even.
What distro are you currently running?
At the moment, I am using Solus OS, but of course, I kind of jump between that and Arch. And on the phone, I have Ubuntu Touch.
That's very cool. All right. Well, thank you, Lux, for being on the show. Can you tell the listeners where they can find your content online?
You can find my stuff on YouTube and LBRY, and that's on Linux Lounge.
So that is some exciting news about Lux and LibreQuest in the coming weeks and months. All right. So I wanted to speak today with you about something that I think is really cool. It's most commonly known as IDE. but it's also known as ATA. That is actually, ATA would be the proper name. ATA standing for Advanced Technology Attachment. Now, you may have seen PATA, PATA, or SATA, SATA. PATA meaning Parallel Advanced Technology Attachment. SATA meaning Serial Advanced Technology Attachment. But IDE, Integrated Drive Electronics, is what most people commonly refer to as the little cables that attach to your motherboard that connect your hard drive and your CD-ROM drives. In fact, I have a motherboard sitting behind me right now that is from a Dell Dimension 8100 Limited Edition behind me right now. And on the board itself, it says IDE1 and IDE2. Now that is the 40-pin header where you would hook in your ribbon connector cable that has one connector on one end that plugs into your motherboard and two connectors on the other end that plug into your hard drives or your CD-ROM drives. ATA was, or what's known as T13, was approved by ANSI, which is the American National Standards Institute, through an approval process where a vote and consensus are taken to adopt standards. Now, there's nothing compulsory about these standards that are passed or agreed upon, rather, but if a standard is adopted and used, it does have guidelines that it has to abide by. So, why am I talking about IDE? Well, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting topic, specifically if you're new to using IDE hard drives or CD-ROM drives, and you're maybe confused about the different jumpers on the back. So, on an individual device, let's say a CD-ROM drive or a hard drive, you'll see pins on the back. Now, every drive will come with its own diagram to show you where to place the jumpers on these pins. There are three settings. There's master, slave, and cable select. So the last one, cable select, just means that wherever that device is on the cable itself, whether it's first in line or second in line, that's how it's going to be made available to your operating system. Now, typically, you'll have your main device that you're booting from be the first device in line, and any secondary storage or CD-ROM devices you'd have at the end of your cable. However, with the introduction of Enhanced IED or Ultra ATA, it was then the primary drive that was located on the end of the cable, and also with an 80-conductor cable, cable select was then supported by default, when previously you would have had to have had a cable select compatible cable. Now, there was some confusion in the older days with 286s, 386s, 486s. These systems, a lot of the older systems, they, on the header, the cable could be inserted basically any way the user wanted to. Now, every cable did come with a red stripe on pin number one to help orientate where it needed to be plugged into the motherboard, but it wasn't until later that that header standard was changed to include a notch that would prevent people from plugging the cable in the wrong way. And I've actually done that myself. It was on an older 486 system, and there was an ISA or ISA card that provided floppy drive support and CD-ROM hard drive support over the IDE or ATA protocol. So in regard to the speed of an IDE or PATA, PATA or ATA device, they're not very fast, but it really does depend on what generation you're using. Originally, ATA to Ultra ATA supported 2 to 33 megabytes per second, but later Ultra ATA was changed to include 80-pin ribbon connector cables, which supported from 66 to 133 megabytes per second. Now, I'm not going to go over SCSI, and I'm probably never going to cover SAS either. I tend to stick with consumer-grade hardware. That's my personal experience. That's kind of what I'm into talking about. So basically, if you're using this technology and maybe you're curious about how exactly you hook these things up, well, the cable will have two connectors on the very end, or closer to the end, and then one connector closer to the beginning. Now, the beginning part is where you're going to plug it into the motherboard. And then that's going to give you enough space to mount your other devices, and hopefully the length from your motherboard to where you're going to be mounting those in your chassis. Now, it depends on what kind of cable you're using, but typically if you're using an 80-conductor cable, then the motherboard end will be the color blue and the other ends will be black. This will help to indicate where to plug into your motherboard and where to plug into your drives. However, if you hook it up in a different configuration, there's no reason that the cable shouldn't work. Now, there were different sizes of cables, and in fact, a lot of companies only added one device-capable cable, meaning there was just one pin to plug into the motherboard and then one other end to plug into your device, which could be very frustrating. And it happened quite a bit. I think eMachines did this, Gateway. I know HP did it. And it was very frustrating. And you had to go and you had to buy additional cables if you wanted to add any additional storage or devices to your system. So kind of as I said before, you'll want to know what kind of cable you're working with. The original cables had 40 conductors, meaning 40 wires, while later the Ultra or Enhanced had 80 conductors or 80 little wires. That means that all 40 pins had their own individual grounding wire, thus enhancing the data transfer rate capability. So I did want to talk a minute about some of the abbreviations that you might see and you may not know what they mean. This is basically going over that. So you might see ATA. Of course, I've already stated that's Advanced Technology Attachment, and IDE would be Integrated Drive Electronics or Enhanced IDE. And then there was, of course, later Ultra ATA as well. Now, the term Parallel ATA PA or PATA, wasn't adopted really until after the release of the SATA standard, or I guess I should say after the adoption of the SATA standard, and in order to differentiate between the two, the term PATA became widely used. Another one would be ATAPI, A-T-A-P-I, that's Advanced Technology Attachment Packet Interface, and ATAPI was specifically developed to handle different instructions for disk drives. This includes transports such as the power control, device signature, command transport, power conditions, and PCIe transport. You may sometimes see DMA referenced. DMA means direct memory access. It allows the drive and the memory to communicate without involving the CPU. And then, of course, you have PIO, which is programmed input-output, which allows two devices to communicate with each other without using the RAM and only utilizing the CPU. Something else that you may see in reference to older drives is large block addressing, or LBA. This allows access of drives that are larger than 528 megabytes. Now, I still have some systems that are running mostly, I think they're both running versions of MX Linux that are older. I find MX Linux to run really well on old hardware, and it's really kind of mind-blowing because there's all this wireless support, and it's running on really old hardware with wireless support, which if you lived through the time of the wireless problems that Linux had, it would probably blow your mind, or probably equally as much as my mind gets blown, blows your mind as well. I just think it's amazing, and it's just, there's something about using the older hardware with a newer, like, up-to-date and supported system that just feels amazing. I don't know, it's just so cool to be able to use Linux on this old hardware and to see it, like, you know, like breathing, like living again. It's just, there's something so fulfilling to me about that. I don't know why. It's kind of weird. But if you've listened to the podcast before, you know that I love to talk about hardware just as much as I love to talk about Linux. I've always really been into hardware, computer hardware, figuring that stuff out, using all that stuff. It's just amazing. So the last thing I want to talk about, ANSI, the American National Standards Institute. This is from page 4 of the T13/2161-D revision 5 documentation, and that is, of course, about ATA and SATA and the other, you know, standards that use the same transport protocols. And it reads, there's just a few paragraphs here I'd like to read. Approval of an American National Standard requires verification by ANSI that the requirements for due process, consensus, and other criteria for approval have been met by the standards developer. Consensus is established when, in the judgment of the ANSI Board of Standards Review, substantial agreement has been reached by directly and materially affected interests. Substantial agreement means much more than a simple majority, but not necessarily unanimity. Consensus requires that all views and objections be considered and that effort be made towards their resolution. The use of American national standards is completely voluntary, and their existence does not in any respect preclude anyone, whether he has approved the standards or not, from manufacturing, marketing, purchasing, or using products, processes, or procedures not conforming to the standards. The American National Standards Institute does not develop standards and will in no circumstances give interpretation on any American national standard. Moreover, no person shall have the right or authority to issue an interpretation of an American national standard in the name of the American National Standards Institute. Requests for interpretation should be addressed to the Secretariat or sponsor whose name appears on the title page of this standard. So that's just a little bit of an in-depth explanation of what they do and what their purpose is in regards to these standards that I talked about today. So we talked about ATA or IDE. We talked about ATA. We talked about ATAPI or ATAPI and basically their relation to each other, how they work, and what they do. I hope this has been somewhat insightful or at least a bit nostalgic for you. Thank you for being a listener. If you'd like to support the show, you can over on Patreon. You can over on Subscribestar. And if you'd like to know all the places that the show is available, go to LibreQuest.org. In the front page there, there's a whole list of where you can get the show. The latest one that's been added is the Google Play Store. So I don't personally use the Google Play Store, but I know a lot of people do. And so hopefully that might be convenient for you. Until next time, this has been Matt for LibreQuest.